Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and my name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, we're going to talk about cars. We can talk about cars and motorhomes. We can talk about emissions estimates. We can talk about new air conditioning versus old air conditioning. We can talk about newer model technology as opposed to points and condensers for the 55 Chevrolets, stuff like that. So you're welcome to join us. It's easy, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And my guest is Bill from 25th Street Auto. He's on regularly, but it's fun because we're both of the same about age, and we both started when we were in high school, I think.
Yep, a lot alike.
In gas stations. And so if you go back to that, how many years, go from your first automotive job, how many years, I put you on the spot because I'm making you do math right off the bat.
Yeah, I worked at a Marathon gas station while I was going to trade school. In the late 70s.
Okay. And I started at Ken's Broadway Shell in 1968 when I started high school. And I started pumping gas. And the biggest thing for me was getting to be able to do flat repairs. To move from pumping
really
gas.
You really made it by then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you were in tall cotton if you got to fix tires. And back then it was plug or patch. And Ken was one of those guys that we didn't plug them. We patched them for whatever reason.
But we bubble balanced them back in that time.
We did. We bubble balanced them. But you learned the technology. You learned all kinds of stuff. If you remember with bubble balancing, we were triangulating the heavy spot.
Mm-hmm.
Even today we do that, except we do it with much more
sophisticated.
With a computer. 602-508-0960. So right now in your world, where are we at with respect to cars and maintenance and stuff like that? Are you seeing people avoid maintenance? Are you seeing people that over-maintain? What are you seeing?
I think most people don't mind investing in their car because they know how expensive it is to replace it, but they just aren't informed. They don't know how to do it. And, you know, there's some people like you and I that will tell them what's sensible. You know, what would we do if it was our car and we wanted it to last another 5 or 10 years? Unfortunately, there's a lot of places, you know, like they go to the dealer, and, you know, I have found from speaking to a lot of people that, you know, the dealer has an agenda that they're going to sell them these things, whether it's right for them or not. And I like the idea of having a relationship with somebody, and it could be somebody at the dealer, or, you know, very often, you know, a little corner shop, you know, a smaller shop like you and I, so that we can say, you know, how do you use your vehicle? How long do you intend to keep it? And, you know, and just make tailor a plan to them that fits.
I agree with everything you said. The real tiebreaker is the manual.
Mm-hmm.
And the manual pretty much lays it out for every car.
Yep.
And they're talking about Arizona to Connecticut. They're talking about from Maine to San Diego and from Spokane, Washington to Miami, Florida. It's covered.
Yep.
The problem I'm seeing is that because the oil changes are now in a synthetic based, and some of these cars have a trigger on the dashboard that can be between 8 and 12,000 miles.
Right.
All of a sudden, we've got, and it's true, it's in the chain stores, in the independents, and in the dealerships. They all do it. We're starting to call people in. We're selling them a premium oil change, and I hate this. I'm going to sell you a premium oil change. It's going to cost you $120, which is a synthetic change.
Right.
I'm going to sell you that, but I'm going to call you back in 3 or 4 or 5,000 miles, when really that oil should go anywhere from 8 to 15, depending on what your manual says. That's a difficult situation. And so I object to the fact that you're putting a premium. Why don't we put a semi-synthetic or just a conventional? If we're only going to go 3,000 miles, let's go back to the conventional oil.
Then let's go back, yeah.
Exactly. So the oil itself dictates the interval, and the car is programmed for the oil that's in the manual. So
right.
If you put a 0-20 synthetic in it, then if it says it's going to turn on the light at 8,000 or 10,000 or 12,000, it's going to turn on the light.
Right.
And some of the cars go by mileage, but there's also those algorithms that talk about how many times you've had a heat cycle, have you warmed up the car, and then let it get cold.
Some of them have a different algorithm than the odometer.
And then the odometer. It could be how many hours it's been running, how many hours it's been idling,
mm-hmm.
How far...
How many starts.
Exactly. How far did you drive it in between start up and shut off?
Mm-hmm.
So are you...
Were
like,
you fully warmed up or not? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Renee, she goes to the liquor store and back. That's all she ever does.
Uh-oh, she's probably listening to this.
It's okay, it's okay. She's heard all of the jokes I've got. But at the end of the day, that's the real issue is it's nice to tailor it. But then the question is this, who's tailoring it for whose benefit? So if you're selling the premium oil change and calling them back at 3,000 and 5,000 miles, I think that speaks for itself. And of course, then it's chatter that's been pumped into their ears. We're in Arizona. We're different. We've been in Arizona all of our life, and we know we're different. But that oil turns to a tar at 500 degrees. The motor's toast long before then.
Right.
So we have all these dynamics that I'm going to overcome all those sales techniques that you may have been told. We've even got people doing tire rotations at every oil change on the 3,000-mile call. I don't know about you, but we don't do them at 3,000 miles.
No, you know, you can wear things out. You can cycle things. You know, there's going to be so many cycles in the lifetime of any component in the car. That includes the studs and nuts that hold your wheels on. That you shouldn't be 100 pounds per square inch torquing these things on and off every 3 months.
Right.
The tires, they just don't. It doesn't need to be rotated that often. About on the average, and I say average, different cars, different drivers, you know, every couple oil changes.
Right.
And oil changes don't come every 3 months like they used to. So it's, you're right. It comes back to that relationship. You got to have somebody that you trust to tell you what's right.
And it's real self-serving for you to put your arms around a customer and say, you know, this is an expensive car and I'm going to do my best to make it last forever. Mm-hmm. Well, my answer is I say to the customer, if you want it to last forever, don't run it hot, don't overheat it until steam's coming out of the hood, and don't run it low on oil. That's it.
That's pretty much what it takes. You know, the basics are simple.
Well, how many motors do you do that haven't been terribly overheated or run low on oil? They all die for that.
Yeah.
And so I got a guy up in Payson that has 465,000 miles on a Ford truck. And I said, I have to see this. I want to see this. And you can look at it, and you can look at the odometer, and you can look at the whole truck, and you know this. Now, this thing has been around the girth of the earth at 400,000 miles, 25,000, eight times. No, it's not eight times. It's four times, 20 times. How's my math?
I don't remember my geography, much less my math.
Okay, it's 25,000 miles around the equator. So every 100,000 miles, he's done a four circle.
Right.
So he has 400,000 miles.
Yeah.
So he's been around the girth of the earth many, many times.
Many times.
And I tell people, your car's not going to fail till you fail it.
Yeah.
And if you ignore the steam, you ignore the red lights on the dash and stuff like that, those are the ones that get towed in on a tow truck, and those are the ones that are going to get a big fat estimate for an engine. So, and transmissions, gosh, we used to do lots of work to transmissions at 30K, 15 and 30K. Now we hardly touch them for the first 100,000 miles.
Yep.
Hardly touch them. And if we do touch them, it's because the computer set a code for it or something like that that says, hey, you need to look at this.
Yep.
So it's tough. But our industry, there's lots of shops in town that I really respect, and none of us are having problems making our electric bill, and none of us are having problems paying our technicians, and we're pretty much sticking by the parameters associated with a particular car. I don't think it's necessary to oversell somebody or to trick them into something, especially when you sell them a tire rotation, but the real basis has nothing to do with whether it's due for a rotation. It gives us a chance to look at the brakes and sell them a $1,000 brake job.
You know, that I think most people in the industry, that's it. You got to get those tires off of there hoping to sell them something. And unfortunately, you know, what I call the dog and pony show, they have you waiting at the shop and they tell you, oh, look at here. You need to replace these brakes. Do your kids drive in this car? You know, you don't want to kill your kids. You need brakes. Well, when the truth is, you know, brake pads wear and they get thin, and they'll be back in another 6 months for an oil change. It's probably might need another brake job. It might need the brakes then, not today. You know, and it's all about sell, sell, sell.
I'm seeing a whole lot of lower control arm bushings. I'm seeing a whole lot of things that have obvious symptoms when they're defective, and you say to the person, I see somebody put two new lower control arms complete, ball joints and all the bushings.
Yep.
Why didn't they just do the bushings? Why did they do the ball joints? I don't know. Okay, how about tire wear? I'm looking at the tires. I don't see any abnormal wear. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any. Well, what did they say to tell you to do that? Well, they said that I needed lower control arm bushings.
Yeah.
I said, okay, but they put arms
they
on
put
there.
Whole arms. Yeah. Ball joints and arms, things like that. Now, you know, when you look at the labor time to do the bushings and how affordably can you get an arm, it may be an option for the customer.
Right. But if they're already selling lower control arm bushings at 50,000 miles, I'm not...
It didn't need the rest of that stuff. And it probably didn't need the lower control arm bushings. They were not new anymore.
They're cracked.
They were cracked.
They were cracked.
And we tell people, we're going to watch these, because someday it's going to need to have these bushings replaced, or the control arms, whatever's appropriate. But we see probably every week in my shop, somebody comes in, the dealer said this, mm-hmm. you know, and I said, the dealer said you needed brakes and you needed bushings. I just know that's what they're going to say. And we bring the car in and we say, well, we don't agree.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I also talk about the symptoms. When you have lower control arm bushings bad, there's a clunk on a quick takeoff and a quick stop as the arm shoves forward and backwards. There's almost always there's an audible noise or a feel. In addition to that, you're likely to have tire wear issues. So you're going to be wearing the inside edges or the outside edges of the front tires abnormally. We always have worn the outside edges of the tires as you turn left and right. That's why we rotate them. But there's just all these things. You know, he said I needed a transmission. Well, what was wrong with it? I don't know. How much was the transmission? $1,600. Okay, but, I mean, did it have all the gears? Did it leak profusely? Did it smoke? What was the symptom? Well, he just said that he had plugged something into it and the transmission was getting ready to give up the ghost. Do you have anything in your shop that's going to tell you the transmission has an expected life?
I don't have a ghost giver upper tool.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm going to see if I can find one of those. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, AutoDynamics is up in Sun City. He's a good guy. He's been around for a very long time. I've known Chuck since the 60s and the 70s. And I know that he knows the difference between right and wrong. So when people call and they say, I'm in the Sun City area, I'm going to send you to Auto Dynamics, 91st Avenue, north of Grand. Guy, a good guy, been around a long time. And I'm proud to recommend them because I know that I'm not going to get calls on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're wanting to sell them all kinds of stuff. So we'll be back in just a minute. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can give us a call if you'd like to, 602-508-0960, and we're going to go to the phones and take care of William because he's been waiting through the break. And William, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Pretty much, I don't really have a question for you today. I just wanted to praise your shop, Action Auto, on Deer Phoenix. Over this last weekend, I had visitors from Spokane. They drove down here in their Subaru, and they were down here, and my brother-in-law thought he had a bad wheel bearing. I said, well, I know the perfect shop, Action Auto, there right by where you're staying. And it's so refreshing, Mark, that I can refer him to an honest shop, you know, that's not going to jack him around. And they took care of him, got him in like a couple days later, and took care of the job, and now he's back home in Washington. So I'm very grateful for your show, and you guys are so honest and trustworthy, and I thank you for what you do every Saturday.
Well, William, thank you. You made my whole day because I'm pretty particular about who we talk about, and I'm very proud of when they perform like that because that's the way we promise that they're going to perform in the way that industry standards accept. And the noise that you have has to be diagnosed first, and then we have to make sure that we've got it right, and then there's a bid and an estimate and then a repair, and then hopefully we come in at or below our estimate. So I'm grateful that you did this, and I wrote down on my sheet here the time that I took you and the time that I'm going to say goodbye, so I'm going to cut that out and send it to Action when I get done and do the editing of the show after the show. So
very good, and thank you so much, sir.
All righty.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you. That's what makes it really worthwhile. I get at least one or two calls or emails a week about the guys on the shop list, and it makes it all worthwhile just because and maybe once or twice a year I get a complaint about one of the guys. I think I told you, Bill, not too long ago somebody had complained that they had an oil leak.
and then they looked at it themselves, and it's just not fixed. I sent it to another shop, and then the customer called me back, and he goes, I'm calling to apologize. The shop said they did fix the oil leak. They didn't do a good job cleaning up. I'm looking at the trash.
The residual.
Exactly. And I said, so what was the answer? Well, the answer was a couple of jack stands and taking the car somewhere on the lot and just kind of washing the underside down with a pressure washer.
Right.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, so you're happy? Yeah, I'm good. So it's been clean how long? Well, it's been clean for quite a while. Okay, so we're not dripping any more oil. No, uh-uh. Okay. I'm not quite sure cleaning up after that is good time. You know what I mean? How do you charge that? If you're going to pressure wash the underside of a car after you fix an oil leak, do you add that to the labor on the oil leak? Or and what kind of a mess? It's going to take longer to clean up the mess you made than it is to clean the underside of the car.
Well, hopefully you didn't make a big mess working on the car, but driving the car around for the first 4 months that the car was leaking before they took it in for repairs, mm-hmm. gravity and the wind is going to make a mess everywhere. So I believe that part of the job is to clean it up. And, you know, a technician can charge for this package deal of I'm going to diagnose it, I'm going to repair it, I'm going to clean it up, because cleaning it up is part of the repair in my book. Or you can itemize things. In my shop, we itemize things. This is... you know, very, very often there's no diagnosis involved in an oil leak. You know, you get underneath it, there it is. But, you know, if there was, there was. But this is what it legitimately should be charged to repair this vehicle. And when the manufacturer sets labor charges, they didn't expect that there was going to be oil from one of the car to the other. So that isn't really included in the estimated time of replacing a seal. But ours is we put a degreaser on it. We take it over to the steam cleaner, like you've got the steam cleaning facilities at your shop, and we clean it up, and then we blow dry all the electrical components because we don't want the car to develop a misfire or a check engine light when we get done. And we also, if we have any suspicion that this 120,000 miles may have had other leaks hiding in this leaky mess than the one we were confident of, we add a leak detecting dye. So in case we get back there later, we can use a black light test to better find. Sometimes we do it in the opposite direction. We clean it up, and we add the dye, and we say, drive this car for a couple weeks or until you see a drip under your car, and then we're going to do part two, get underneath there with a black light, because I don't want to... A lot of shops will say, there's oil on your top of your engine, your exhaust manifolds, and the oil pan, so it must need all those things. Well, we say, you know, there's gravity. So it at least has oil leaking from the top thing. But sometimes we'll say, you know, we don't know how much is normal for 80,000 miles and how much you need to invest in. So we're going to start with the steam cleaning part, and we're going to tell you just how much oil is leaking from every little place. This is too small to worry about. It's normal seepage. This is a real leak, and I suggest you fix it.
Okay, and just to further clarify, what we're going to do is we're going to add a liquid additive, a dye, to your engine oil. And engine oil is going to be brown or black. Well, what happens is when we put these funky glasses on and we have this black light, then all of a sudden the leak turns to lemon yellow or blue or red or whatever kind of
dye you've
got.
Leaked out since you put the dye in it,
right.
Not the residual mess.
And so you're just going to follow the dye to the leak, the back of the intake manifold, the rear main seal, mm-hmm. the valve covers, the intake, just wherever oil can leak. Because following the oil to the leak helps us identify the leak as well as guarantee that we're going to stop that leak. But like you, like everybody else in our industry that's smart, it's not a promise that this thing's not going to drip any oil. We're going to mm-hmm. fix one leak, and we're going to make a substantial difference in the oil. But right now you got oil on your rear bumper. So I'm going after the big dog. I'm not going after the small ones.
After thinking we got the rear bumper leaking.
You're exactly right. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In our particular industry right now, it's kind of in shambles in the sense that many of the new cars don't have anything to do to them for the first 100,000 miles. In the old days, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even into the 2000s, we were doing fluids like 30,000, 40, 50, 60,000 mile intervals. So cooling system, transmission fluid, differential fluids, what other fluids am I missing here? Power steering fluids, brake fluid. now today, almost everything in your car manual will describe that for you. Almost everything is at 100,000 miles. So you're going to have some big bills at 100,000 because you're going to have to do a lot of fluid changes. But in the old days, we would spread those out over 30, 60, 90, and 100 and so forth. So it's going to be different, but the fluids are different too. Then that makes kind of a big deal in with respect, because now we're going to have you go 100,000 miles on your tranny or 100,000 miles on your differential or your transfer case, where before we didn't do that. But it just has to do with this the synthetic fluids and the process to build the gears and everything, the clutches and all that kind of stuff. So just again, your manual is your Bible for your car. There has to be a reason to deviate from that. And of course, the obvious ones are always there. If you have to replace the upper radiator hose and it calls for the hoses, let's pretend it calls for the hoses at 100,000, and you're going to do the upper or the lower radiator at 90, you might as well do them all. Otherwise, you're going to have coolant charges and labor charges and flush charges on every single hose. So you just do them at the same time.
Agreed. Cheaper to do it all at once.
Yeah. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can use our toll-free number, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. And if you have a problem with me, I want to help you out with that. I'll put you in touch with the right people. My name is Mark Salem, and you're going to address your note to Salem Communications at KKNT Phoenix, and then they'll call me and counsel me the best they can. I get in trouble when I do that, but it's still funny.
I was waiting for that one.
It's still funny. They go, do you really own that station? No, my dad does. And it's just some kind of a joke. It has nothing. It's just the Salem Communications, and my last name is Salem, and it's just simply a coincidence, and I have no ownership, neither does anybody in my family, of Salem Communications, although I am an employee of theirs. So 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. Let me talk to you real quick about Strictly Diesel. They're a good shop. They're up on Pinnacle Peak and I-17. Nate's a really good guy with Chevy, Ford, Dodges. He does some other diesels, so if you have another diesel, you can call him and ask him if that's one of the diesels that we work on, that he works on. But you only have to meet Nate and shake his hand to understand why Mark Salem likes him so much. He's a really big guy. He is really nice. He has hands like tennis rackets, which I'm sure he'd like to slap me on the head every once in a while. But at the end of the day, he really does know diesels well. And one of the things that he does that most shop owners won't admit to is he'll take your call and talk about your problem. He'll tell you that he can't diagnose your car over the phone, but he'll tell you what it's likely to be and get close to it. So it'll be this, this, or this. And those are the kinds of things that Nate does good. Nate is a good guy at Strictly Diesel, and that's I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And Dave, thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. I have to start BMW, a 2019 X3, into the dealer about a month ago because the engine light had come on and said that we needed to do a brake flush, which is covered by warranty, so there's no charge for it. But when we were there, or when they serviced it, they recommended a few other items to be done. And, I don't know, a couple, 3 weeks ago, you were talking about how a lot of these things that come up on the computer or whatever aren't really necessary to be done. Just wanted to get your opinion on a couple, three of them.
Okay.
Now, the BMW is driven by my wife, and it's driven mostly around town, has about 30,000 miles on it. And they're recommending an engine decarbon flush.
We're both sitting here smiling. We had that verbiage long when you first started. You have, let's cover that real quick. You could say to him, what symptom do I have now that you're going to fix? Because there's no good answer for that. You could say to him, would you show me where that's at in my owner's manual? And you could look him in the eye and just say, I need you to write that down because my brother is this car guru expert in Kentucky and I'm going to run this by him. And he testifies on the federal court level. So when you open that door up, it's ugly at that point. And frankly, Bill, let me ask you a question. When is it that you decarbonize an engine? when you guys do?
Very rarely. Usually it's when we have a symptom.
Right.
You know, some cars, like the direct injected engines,
yes,
are more susceptible to carbon buildup on the valves. Now, sometimes, in the dealer's defense, or in any shop's defense, you know, sometimes there's something misunderstood. It wasn't necessarily, decarboning something. There was actually flushing it for some reason or another. If they were going to flush your engine, that would be the oil, and no, it didn't need to be done at 30,000 miles. As far as decarboning, I'd like to see their proof that that engine is such a problem that all the other things are covered under warranty, but this one procedure isn't.
Well, not only that is if you have a tremendous amount of carbon, typically the carbon will glow bright red and cause pre-ignition. And so you have a problem with pre-ignition and it's pinging, and we decarbonize it. How do you decarbonize? Do you use chemicals?
2 minutes.
Or use water?
Well, we use chemicals.
Okay.
There's water. There's nutshells. You know, there's all kinds of ways.
Well, I know, but the nutshells isn't a fair analysis because we're going to do it while the motor's running and stuff like that. We're not going to be shoving nutshells downside the intake manifold. You know that, and I'm teasing you about that. But to be honest with you, I don't remember the last time we decarbonized an engine. That's not even on our menu. That would cause all of our staff to go crazy and go search out some of the old guys and saying, hey, what do we charge for a decarbonization? it's not something that we have on our menu at all. And I would imagine it's going to be a labor code 99, which is a catch-all number. So if you're going to be doing performance, it's P99 because that's going to be okay. So to answer your question, unless you have some specific symptoms, and of course you're going to say to the young person that's talking to you, what symptoms are you going to fix with your suggestion? How much was the decarbonization?
$251.
Whew. I'll tell you what, I'll do it for $199. You got another number?
There you go. I'll do it for $195. Yeah. I'll save $4 in my...
the issue is...
The only thing they're saying is that it's recommended every 30,000 miles.
By who, for what reason? Miles. That's what I always get back to with recommendations. Anyone can recommend anything for any reason. And it may be recommended by the salesperson because his boss told him he has to sell things.
The guy who sold him the machine is the one
that's recommended.
He's the one that says, oh, I tell you what, this is going to make your customers love you because you're going to sell it to them every 30,000 miles. And the gross profit on this, you push the button, you hook these two hoses up, you walk away. An hour later, you're going to make $250 for a $30 bottle of juice, and that technician is working on another car. That's what it sounds like in the background. The answer to your question is that's a big bag of BS if I've ever heard of it. There are specific symptoms needed for carbon decarbonization of a motor, and you don't have any. And so
it's perfect. I mean, we have had absolutely no problems with the car. I mean, you know, starting, running, driving, whatever.
So that was
the first thing they recommended.
Okay.
Then they also recommended a fuel injector flush.
Same thing.
That's also saying recommended every 30,000 miles for another $251.
Yep. Again, we flush fuel injectors when we have an engine miss on number 5. And so we're going to go in and flush the fuel injectors to see if we can get that one to change. And if we can flush the fuel injectors and it changes, then we know it's probably dirt. So maybe we'll pull it and clean it, or maybe we'll clean it again. There's all these moving parts. But all they're doing is, oh, gosh, $500 so far. Give me the third one.
Well, actually, the other one, when we took it in, they said we needed new tires. I went ahead and got new tires at another shop.
Okay.
And then they recommended the alignment, which probably wasn't a bad idea, and they wanted $270 for that. And I took it to a shop here in North Phoenix and had it done for $150.
Okay, so, what's your alignment, Billy?
Most cars, 129.
Okay, and we're going to be 150 or so on a four-wheel alignment where we hang foreheads. But here's the deal. The time to look at the tires is before you do the tires, because it's normal to have outside edge wear on two front tires because they lay over when you turn left and right. And if all you got is a little bit of outside edge wear and the backs are nice and square, you don't need to do an alignment. There's nothing to suggest you need to do an alignment. There's no problem to do an alignment. What happens is the people don't rotate them. They leave them on the front too long. The outside edges wear, and then all of a sudden you're sold all kinds of upper control arm bushings and struts and stuff like that, when in reality it's just a matter you didn't rotate them on a regular basis. Anyway, well, thank you for educating us.
Tires were flat tires, and in all fairness to the dealership, when they said, you know, you need to replace them, they were down to the point where, you know, like 2/32 or whatever.
Okay.
So, we thought we had to replace them, and
yep.
When we did the alignment, it was out of alignment somewhat. So
I know, okay, you ask for our opinion, and I'm going to tell you, I can make the alignment machine do anything I want. I can just take one finger and push on this piece of string right here, or I can push this little sensor out here. I can give you whatever readings I want to give you. The proof of the pudding is the front tire wear. That's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. Nobody else can argue with that, and if they can, then they're going to have half the industry on their back. It's out of alignment. Of course it's out of alignment, but we are taking a human hair and splitting it by 10. And so if it's 9 out, everybody goes, ooh, I'm going, come on. 9 portions of a human hair, and we're going to worry about that? And then they show you the graph, and it's got a green graph, and then it's got your needles over here in the red, where if you look at it, it's 2/100 of a thousandth. And you go, come on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got to run. Thank you very much, Dave. That was a good discussion. I don't want to beat up any of the dealers, but this is the kind of conversation that we would typically have with a customer who really needed the stuff that you described. 602-508-0960. Well, 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Bill from 25th Street Auto and Mark Salem right here in Tempe, and we're talking about car and car repair issues. I don't bring up the name of my shop, and I don't talk about my shop except in a generic way, because this show is not about my shop. It's about the good shops in town. I'll tell you about one real quick, is Action Auto. He's up there on North I-17, and Tom has been a good guy. His name is Action Auto, and he's been a good guy at that intersection of Deer Valley and I-17 for a very, very long time. So if you live up in that area and you want to, just take your car in for an oil change, see how they treat you, see what the inside looks like, listen to the service writers on the telephone. That's what you should do on your first visit, and it should be something as simple as an oil change. I'm quite sure that you'll find that Action Auto has most everything that you want, and they're honest and they're dependable. When we start talking about the $250 injector flush and the $250 mm-hmm. decarbonization stuff, that just wads my panties up something fierce. here's what I think the issue is, and I'm talking generically with respect to there's independent shops, there's chain stores, there's dealerships, and I can't think of any other category.
I think that's the category.
Okay. And if those are the three, it has everything to do with just the process created by the people that are empowered to do that.
Right.
And if the technicians know that they can slap a $250 flush on this and a $250 flush on this, and the service writer will sell it, then why not? But it's up to who's defending the customer at that point. Shouldn't the service writer say, what symptom are you going to fix with this? What do you see that necessitates this injector flush? Help me out so when I have some intelligent answers for you if the customer asks me the questions.
It comes back to the relationship. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, okay, it's recommended by who and for what reason? You know, like you said, what symptom am I going to mm-hmm. fix? You know, by who? Well, the dealer made up this recommendation.
Or anybody. It could be an independent shop.
The facility. But when I say dealer, yeah. I meant facility. You know, it's the shop. Okay, why? Was it for their marketing reason? Mm-hmm. Or was it for they've actually seen this car with problems at this age, and this procedure actually improved, and you can see it on your equipment, the improvement in performance. If there's a reason for that, and they've seen a pattern of failure, wonderful. But all too often, it's just, oh, no, this is our marketing plan, as we recommend it at this mileage because it's good for us financially. And like at my shop, and I believe at your shop, it's more about we make recommendations based on real things that we would recommend to our own family. We've seen the difference, and like you, we've been recognized for doing business ethically.
And it has a lot to do with everything that you said, but in the circumstances that are in front of us right now, it's clear that all we're doing is padding somebody's wallet.
Mm-hmm. That's what I see.
It's too new. The car is too new. We're mm-hmm. still talking about a 2019.
Yeah, I agree.
And then if we can get the customer into that, then the next time it's, you know, we did decarbonization at 30,000 miles and it's 60. So we need to do that
again.
And so we just fall into this pattern of continuing. It's no different than if every time you went into the doctor and after he looked in all of the different orifices, he sends you down for blood work and glucose work and he does all that. That's okay. He's looking for hints of problems. He only sees you for this period of time. But that's no different than us checking all the fluids, the belts,
right,
the hoses, oil leaks.
Every 6 months
when we do your oil change. It's no different. So the idea is that it just I'm offended when we use those simple things and we create the notion that this is needed and it's okay. Let me tell you a story. There's a friend of mine. I have lots of people in the legal industry that are a friend of mine, but this is a judge. And he's a very principled guy. So he calls me up and he says he took my car into the shop. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then they did this, and they told me this, and this is what it needed, but it didn't fix my problem. And then this is what it was needed, and it didn't fix my problem. So they're clearly guessing with his mm-hmm. money. So at the end of the day, they finally fix it. And I say, okay, so what's the purpose of this phone call? Are you mm-hmm. crying on my shoulder? Is this where I put my psychiatric hat on and baby you and stuff? I says, you need to go back to them and say to them, there was a whole lot of guessing going on, and I want you to reconsider the whole lot of guessing,
mm-hmm.
because I was paying for your guessing, and at the end of the day, you did finally fix it, but the first two or three were very expensive, and the fix wasn't.
Right.
So he says, okay. He says, I like how you, so I kind of coached him on what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't call me back for quite some time, and so finally I called him the other day, and I said, hey, whatever happened? And he goes, you know, he said, they just said that they would give me that in a full car detail. And I said, okay, so basically you sacrificed your credibility for a full car detail. And he goes, they did a really nice job. I said, are you serious? And he goes, you know, he says, the fight wasn't worth it. He says, they wanted to do the four. And I said, okay, well, what was it represented, the full car detail? How much do you charge for a full car detail or your vendor?
We just don't get involved in it because I can't do it in-house.
Okay, any idea?
I'm thinking anymore that these things have gotten to the $300 to $500 range, but okay. I'm not in the business.
Okay. I think probably $100 to $200 is a better range.
That's the last I spent, but I've heard of bigger numbers.
$400.
Yeah.
This was a $400 detail that they gave him for free so that they didn't have to pay him for guessing on the repair.
For the $1,500 worth of stuff they did.
Exactly. So it was just, I don't know, kind of convoluted. Yeah. I teased him, and I tease him on a regular basis. I said, so let me get this straight. You're a judge, and you just, and he goes, I can be bought. He said that. And I said, I appreciate that.
While he's behind the bench, but when he's talking, driving a car.
And so, you know, I do get to gig him every once in a while. In the same way with police officers. I have a tremendous amount of police officers that do business with me, and every once in a while, one of them will have their, in a nasty kind of way, they had their pants pulled down by some shop, and the idea is now they're mad, but they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But it's really too late, and so there's nothing more that can be done. They said you need this, you said okay, you paid for it, and right. Now you found out that it didn't fix the problem or whatever. Well, you can go back and talk to them, but that's really about it.
Yeah.
And we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Eddie.
Eddie, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Eddie.
How you doing?
Good.
I turn my radio off, okay?
Yeah, the feedback will get you.
Show. I turn the radio off. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead and ask your question.
My question is, I have an 83 Chrysler, New Yorker. And the trouble I have right now is I was driving it. I went to stop for the light, and I went to give it the gas. And it hesitated a little bit, and then it picked up and was okay for a few days. The other day I used the car. Excuse me. The other day I used the car. I went to make a turn to pull into a place. As soon as I turned the wheel, stalled out. And I stalled out on the main road with a lot of traffic. So some guys, they pushed me to the side, and then I started it up, turned the key again, and started up. I drove it after that. It was okay. I came home, no problem. And
All right.
I replaced two gas filters on the car.
Okay.
About a week ago.
Okay.
I put them on, but I had this trouble before I touched the gas filters. I haven't changed them for a while.
Okay.
So I figured, let me change them gas filters. I changed both gas filters. One is underneath the alternator.
Okay, okay. But, Eddie, you've got to be to the end of the story here pretty quick. So do you still have the problems now?
And then after that, it ran okay. The other day, it stalled out again when I made the turn with the wheel.
Okay.
I turned.
Okay, Eddie, we're not getting anywhere, but I wrote down that you have a hesitation and a stall. And I'm here to tell you that I am 1,000% sure that the hesitation isn't caused by a fuel filter.
Right.
Because the fuel filter has a problem with speed. So at 29 miles an hour, you're okay. And at 31 miles an hour, it's bucking and surging and it's running out of fuel because the filter's restricting the flow of fuel. With respect to dying and stalling, the fuel filter can cause a dying and stalling, but typically it's a higher speed than a traffic light. So I'm not quite sure. By just going by what you've given us, which is a hesitation, and that, folks, is when you hit the gas at a traffic light and the car falls on its face and then the engine revs up and you take off. So there's a tremendous hesitation in your throttle. How many different things can the hesitation be?
And at that vintage vehicle, you know, some cars are carbureted, some are fuel injected. It's just the car doesn't seem to understand how much air and fuel to mix and when.
It could be an EGR problem. The EGR valve can be opening up or staying open. So he hits it and it goes into lean condition. It can be an injector problem. It can be a misfire problem. It can be a throttle position sensor problem. It can be a mass airflow sensor or a MAP sensor problem. It has all of these different things that will cause a hesitation. His stalling is a different thing. The stalling is it spark or fuel we're missing? When the engine dies, is it spark or fuel? But we're still back to EGR that's hanging open and fuel supply.
Yeah.
And what else? I mean, there's just so many different things, but the stalling problem can be at 30 miles an hour or at 90 miles an hour. That's important to us.
Right. Since he was pulling in to a store at the time, I suspect that he may also have, as he turned the wheel, touch the gas to go up the rise into the other building, and the two problems could be related. You know, one time it hesitated so much it shut the car off. You know, but unfortunately, these erratic things, the technician's going to have to be able to experience it, and the more he can learn about it, so he can say, I've learned that at this temperature and at this speed and this type of driving, it happens, and then you can take it to a shop and have that researched.
Oh, yeah. Well, when it comes to shops, let's talk about another good shop. We've got a shop in Mesa that's called Thompson's, and Brian and Thelma run Thompson's Auto Repair, and like I said 100 times before, I've known both of their parents for very many years, and they came into the gas station business in the 60s and the 70s in Mesa. The family's, Thompson's, has been around that long. They've been working on cars a very long time. We have lots of shops that apply to be on Mark Salem's Best Car Repair Shops list, but it's a pretty stringent filter. And so, unfortunately, a lot of shops don't have time. I don't want anybody that's been in business for 6 months or a year or 2 years. I want the guys that are 5 to 10 years because they've already made mistakes and they've learned from them. and we're a whole lot better 5 years into our skill level than we were the first year. So when it comes to Mesa, Thompson's is the only place. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley Road, and it's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend. There's lots of other shops, but what makes it a difference is that if you have a problem with Thompson's, Thompson's is agreed to work with me and you to get the problem solved. So I become an advocate for the customer and the shop. And basically, the three of us will sit down and get the car fixed, and then once the car's fixed, everybody knows whose fault it is. So those are the kinds of things. And to be perfectly honest with you, that happens once every 3 or 4 years. I've never had to do that more than once a year ever since 1988 when I started on radio and we developed the best car repair shops list. So it's easy for me because the guys that I surround myself with are all gray-haired guys. They know the difference between right and wrong, and if they don't, their wife does. Right, Bill?
That's right.
And so that's how it works. And again, Thompson's in Mesa is the only shop I can recommend. There's other ones out there, and you're welcome to go to Google and you look at their reviews and all that kind of stuff. But Thompson's is a heavy hitter. When it comes to dealing with the cars that have hesitations and stalls, those two words can actually mean the same on some situations. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And there are, dependent on the repair, they can be completely different.
Yeah.
Because a stall could be fuel or spark, and a hesitation can be spark. Typically not fuel, because if you get past the hesitation, you can do 70 miles an hour, so your mm-hmm. fuel supply and your fuel pressure is good. So those are the kinds of things it is. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Bill from 25th Street Auto is sitting next to me. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us. We have two callers, and we're going to get to them in just a second, but we have three open lines. And Gil is the one that's running the show. He flies the airplane. He's up front. Me and Bill are in the second class section. And so when you call 602-508-0960, he's going to say you want to talk to Mark and say yes, and that's it. And then he puts you on hold, and then he whispers in my ear that you've got Darwin is your next caller. So we're going to go to Darwin. Darwin, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2013 Ford Escape, and every time I turn the ignition off to, say, sit in the car and listen to the radio, it stays on for about 20 seconds, and then it goes off with a display of something about a power-saving banner shows up. Then I have to restart the car, or I don't get it. And I've looked in my owner's manual. There's absolutely nothing telling me how to handle this.
I don't think you can bypass that because you have a push button start. If the key fob is within reach of the that.
Nope.
Okay.
It's a key start.
So when you do, you, how many different positions do you have on the key? Do you have on? You have lock is first, and then on, and then start.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you go to start, you can't back it up to on, and it automatically shuts down after some short period of time.
Yes, that's exactly it. I'll pull in someplace to park, and of course the radio's on. I turn ignition not completely off, just to the on. And it'll run for 20 seconds or so, and then it'll shut off with that banner going across that says it's on a power-saving mode. And I'm going, well, I don't get it.
Okay.
I can't find anything in the manual.
Is this your car or your wife's car?
Both.
Okay. Well, I think it's time for a new car. I think that's what I'm thinking.
I've done 59,000 miles, and this thing, people think it's new because I wax it almost every week without fail.
Okay, well, if that's the case, can you do my truck? I'll sneak over to your house. You can even take your wife to, you know, McDonald's in it or something. I can tell you that we can wire around that. I mean, somebody at a stereo store could wire up a toggle switch or something stupid. I remember one time, you know where I like to put hidden switches? A dimmer switch on the floor.
An old school
dimmer switch on the floor, and I use that as an auto theft deterrent.
Yep, won't crank.
It won't crank. Or you can take the spark or fuel away too with the crank.
Sure can.
And so that is the Mark Salem $55 auto theft device. But in your particular case, the only thing I can offer you is. Get on the internet and do some research with respect to the power saving mode, and I would use words like disable power saving mode on a 14 Escape, 13 Escape. That's what I would do, but I think you're not going to be able to get around the computer. I think you're going to have to just take cigarette lighter voltage, 12 volts, and power up the battery so you can listen to the radio.
In my experience, when I've seen that failure warning on the dashboard, I think I saw it one time, and it was just a fluke and didn't see it again. I've seen it another time, and it was a precursor to a battery replacement. So I'm thinking that. The logic in the see, unfortunately, your car has I think Ford still calls it a GEM, a generic electronic module, a computer that all the other computers talk to, and it gets permission to do things. And it'll monitor things like voltage. And if the voltage gets a little lower than it'd like to see, it's going to say, you know, I'm not going to let you listen to the radio because I'd like your car to start when you need it to start. So it's told to do that. It shouldn't be doing that every 20 seconds. This one could be tricky to get into your computer system deep enough to find the parameters and the different sensors and things like that to find out the source of this. But I'm thinking you should be considering, are you losing voltage anywhere? You have a battery issue, a battery connection issue.
Okay,
those
okay,
kind of things.
Okay, but how much does that cost? An electrical systems check, how much is that?
And unfortunately, to check all of the things, you just wouldn't. It could take weeks.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a battery
check.
A standard electrical test
can range from a quick free thing in a parking lot with a universal device to, you know, $80.
$30 to $60.
Yeah.
So to have somebody go in and do a load test on the battery, do an alternator and regulator test, look for shorts and draws, check starter cranking, all that kind of stuff. It's just a quick check of all the electrical consumption and outputs and inputs. That's, you know, somewhere, let's say $60
yeah.
plus or minus $20. But I agree that it would see that in advance long before the customer would or even we would.
Yeah.
And so that...
By design anyways, but things don't always work as designed.
Yeah, I mean, it's 9 years old. How many batteries has it had?
This is the second one, and it's less than 3 months old.
Okay. Well, that's where I would start. I've offered you two. You can have an electrical systems analysis done on it. And when you put the word analysis in there, it just makes it sound really a lot more money. It's an electrical systems test. And the other option is go to a stereo shop and just have them unplug the radio and grab that hot wire and run it through a cigarette lighter plug and be done with it, if that's what you want to do. But I don't think you're going to get anybody to reprogram your computer, because when you start reprogramming the computer, and we are capable of doing that, you have no idea how it's going to affect the emissions that are coming out of the tailpipe. And most of us will shy away from that in a heartbeat. So, unfortunately, that's it.
I'll take it to Thompson Automotive. They can at least do the electrical test, I'm
yep.
sure.
Yeah, they can. They
sure can.
Well, thank you, Darwin. Thank you very much. Rob, you're up next. Thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Hey, well, you guys opened the show saying lower control arms so many times, I figured I'd better call.
Oh, okay.
I'm working on it.
Are you a control freak?
I'm working on those in my home garage on a 74 Challenger, and I can't get that torsion bar loose, and I'm considering maybe putting it back together and taking it to a shop, so I was kind of looking for maybe a recommendation, somebody that can work on it.
Give me
that.
A geographical area you're in.
I'm around Paradise Valley Mall.
Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway.
Blackwell. Okay.
And you're going to call and ask for Tom or Christy, and you're going to say, I understand, Tom, you don't know which end of the screwdriver to stick in your ear, so can I talk to Christy? And then if you happen to get to him, say, Mark Salem says you have about a 1 in 4,000 chance of answering the question, but he thought I should ask you. And I can tell you that Blackwell does lots of vintage car work. Mm-hmm. So your 74 Challenger is no problem, no challenge to him. And all of us have been in your shoes with those torsion bars. And that is going to be an alignment process to get those back to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And there's a road height that we would use. But you also have to bounce the car, and you have to have someone in the driver's seat when you're doing that, because you have to mimic the normal, pull up to an intersection kind of thing. But Blackwell can handle that for you. And tell him that Mark's going to send you a 50% off coupon, or I promise to send you a 50% coupon.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck, Rob.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Good luck with the coupon. But what that'll do is that'll call. He'll call me. And he'll say, did you, because it always starts off that way, did you really say that you were going to give him a $50 coupon? I did. I was looking for one, but I don't have one. Could you just write
Can
one
you
up
just write one up for him?
Yeah, and just go ahead and write it up for him. I already laid the groundwork to have him come in. If you can't fix his car, then stop whining on my shirt, okay? But anyway, no, Blackwell can pull that off. Anyway, it is a tough thing to do. And the newer model cars are a whole lot different than the cars in the 60s and the 70s. And I'm going to leave out the 80s because that's when we went into a real heavy fuel controls,
right,
mixture control solenoids. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think the 80s were the worst cars in the last 50 years.
I worked at a dealer in those kind of years, and cars were junk. They're just so much better now.
And absolutely where they're so much better. In 1974, we went from points condenser in the mid-70s for mm-hmm. both Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, yep, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, all of them. We went from points and condensers to electronic ignition. And today, that was a great move, but there was sure a lot of learning curves as we went through that. We had Ford ignition modules and pickup mm-hmm. assemblies. We had caps or coils in the cap of the GM distributors that gave us fits because we would transfer the coil, but we wouldn't transfer the ground rod, and the ground rod went with the old cap and so forth and so on. So that was difficult, but at the end of the day, the cars of today are by far, there is no comparison to the Fred Flintstone cars of the 60s and the yeah. 70s. No comparison whatsoever in horsepower, in fuel economy.
They're more like a space shuttle than they are a Falcon.
Oh yeah. And I this is the analogy I use with respect to computers and fuel consumption and fuel delivery. If you wanted to commit suicide, a vehicle in the 70s would help you out within the first 30 minutes of being in the locked garage with the car idling. In today's cars, you're going to die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation in your garage, because it's going to take forever, ever and ever, for you to even feel anything because of the tailpipe and how clean the newer cars are.
Not that we're suggesting you try it.
And thank you for following that up. Yeah, we're not suggesting anybody try
but
that.
But your point is very well made.
Yeah. If you're going to commit suicide with a car, use a 50 or a 60 or a 70-year car. Because
you burn less gas that way.
And it's going to be a lot
quicker. Concerned about the environment.
Yes. All righty, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Have we got anybody holding?
Yes, we have David.
David, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. My wife has a 2016 Kia Soul, and when she went at the emissions back in October, they said the gas cap was bad, so they put one on. And about 3 months later, I get a check engine light when I happen to get her car out one day when I was driving it. So I pop into my dealer. It was the gas cap that they put on. Is this a normal issue, or gas cap cause a check engine light? It went off. They reset the code, and I've not had a problem since then.
Yeah, what we want to do is we want the gas cap to maintain the fumes inside the tank, and we want to suck the fumes out of the tank. And so when we go in and check the system, we want to make sure that we can pull the fumes out. If you have no gas cap on there, then we're going to know that, because when we start sucking on the fumes and we start pulling the fumes, it's going to change the values of all the sensors. So, and then sometimes the cap doesn't breathe at all, and so when we're sucking on the fumes, then it's kind of like sucking on a pop bottle. You don't get anywhere. So there's a variety of sensors that are going to help the computer determine that this is a problem. Let me just tell you this much. Many times when you see a customer with a variety of gas cap issues, one of the customers is stuffing the tank. and so I'm sure it's your wife, but if that's the case, then that will have a bad habit of giving you a check engine light as you flood the canister because you're stuffing the tank.
And by
stuffing, okay, I had my hearing aids, I couldn't pick it up. Stuffing, you mean like overfilling it when it kicks off?
Well, you click until you want to round it off, and you're at $15 and you want to round it off to $17, so all you do is pack the gas tank full, and all the vapor recovery system is full of fuel now and all that stuff. So yeah, after the first or second click, you just got to hang up the nozzle.
I got to plead a mea culpa. I like round numbers, so I'm guilty of that.
and I want to tell you something, David. I am too.
Me too.
I want to go, and I tell my wife, you'll always know when it's not me using the credit card, because I'm stopping at 33, 66, or 99. It just makes it easy for me. And everybody knows that on the company card, anything that stops at 33, 66, or 99 is Mark. Never mind, it has the
double zeros.
Yeah, and you could
do that when you're at restaurants for tips, because my wife laughs, because she'll just do a flat, you know, amount for it. But me, I got to do the math. It's got to be a round number when I'm done with the tip.
And there's no question. For me, when you start talking about tips at restaurant, I just shove that thing over to my wife. I mean, because no matter what I pick, she's going to find fault, especially if the waitress is good looking. and if it's some boy toy, then she'll smile at me and she'll make an effort to say, oh, well, this is a 22% tip. Okay, fine, honey. I don't care. Yeah, he's younger than our youngest child. But nevertheless, anyway, thank you very much, David. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open, except for David. David, I'm going to get to you in just a second. 602-508-0960. You have four lines that are open, and Gil's the one that answers the phone. So if you want to jump on the phone and you have a caller, or you want to take me to task because of something I said, 602-508-0960. David, you're up. How can we help you?
Oh, hi there. Mark, I'm a Canadian snowbird. And when I come back down here in October, later this year, I'll be bringing with me my 2011 BMW X5 diesel, and I'll be looking for a place to get that vehicle serviced, and I'm wondering if you've got any recommendations.
What part of town are you going to end up with when you come here?
Yeah, we're in Sun City Grand, which is a community inside of Surprise, Arizona.
Okay. Auto Dynamics would be the place I'd probably, it's 91st and Grand. And I know he's a good shop. And when you talk about service, you're basically talking about the fundamental oil changes, tire rotations, check the fluids, the belts, and the hoses, and the tires. That's what you're talking about.
That is correct.
And really and truly, all of us do that kind of stuff. So it's the difference between the two extremes in our industry. Some of the people take that to the nth degree and rip the car. And I say rip the car. I'm using that because we're on radio and you can't see me using my hands. They inspect every aspect of the car and come up with a whole bunch of stuff hoping that you'll just bite for three or four of the line items. So what you really want to do is change my oil, check my tires, my fluids, my belts, and my hoses. Do you see anything bad? Call me and let me know. And that's really about it. But Auto Dynamics up there in Sun City and Surprise would handle that with you for no problem.
Right. They're good with diesel and the German vehicles and all of that stuff?
Yeah. And your car has spark and fuel, and it's delivered just like everybody else's. There are certainly some idiosyncrasies with some of the cars that we call 1%ers to 5% of the cars on the market. But until the check engine light comes on, and until it's something that's a lot of times it's a real obvious problem when the check engine light comes on, but you need to go to a BMW guy when you get in the car and when you adjust the seat, then the horn honks. That's when you need the BMW guy. But to do basic maintenance and generic stuff, then you don't really need a BMW guy.
I believe everybody ought to have a relationship with somebody trustworthy in a convenient location for them to get most things taken care of. So for you, I don't disagree at all with Mark's recommendations. However, just like with your doctor, they may refer you to a specialist, and if there's ever something that Automotive Dynamics says you might be better off taking this problem, like I adjust my seat and my horn goes off, to a specialist, trust them.
And that's a great point. I know for sure that all of us on my list, we do that. If you have a particular car that's a 1%er, and every time you close the door, the horn honks or something stupid, we need somebody who's seen that before. And if it were my shop, there's two or three BMW guys around that are just do BMWs. One of them just does BMWs. And heck, he can fix half that stuff over the phone or at least tell you how to fix it. But then I don't feel good about that, so I want to refer the customer there knowing full well that he can. So in your particular case, I'd start with Automotive Dynamics. But your diesel is no different than gas. It has a filter. It has oil. We check it the same way. We drain it the same way. Everything is the same. So the difference is going to be when all of a sudden we start running five codes at once, and somebody that's working on a BMW understands the relationship between all five of those codes, just very much like Billy and I understand Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota.
Sure.
We understand that, oh, we've got a lean condition here. All these codes are related to a lean condition,
yep.
And he pulls out the fuel filter, and it's plug solid. Bingo, we're done. So anyway, well, thank you for calling, and good luck, and I hope you enjoy your stay.
Yeah, we always do. Thank you.
Thank you. 602-508-0960. Gil, anybody? 602-508-0960.
Yes, we have Jim.
Jim, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I called in last week referencing my daughter's 2001 Toyota Corolla that I had the alarm system removed in. It was an aftermarket alarm, and then the shop I go to removed it, picked the car up, ran fine for a couple of weeks, and then I went to start it about 2 weeks ago, and it was just dead. It turned over, but you told me it could be spark or fuel.
Right.
Took it back over. The shop says, call them. Well, we're looking at the electrical system. We haven't found anything, but we'll call you when we do. They called me about an hour later and said, it's your fuel pump. Perfect. So they replaced the fuel pump, drove it home on Tuesday, went out to start it this morning. Dead as a mackerel.
Wait a minute. Stop.
Okay.
Dead as a mackerel doesn't work for me. You got in it in the morning. Did it crank over speed normally, but it wouldn't catch?
This morning, it would not turn over, no radio, just no electricity when I got up this morning. To start.
Okay, now we've just gone from a low voltage situation, and we were at a no fuel situation. So
unrelated.
Unrelated. So okay. Go ahead. So what did they say?
So what he told me today was, well, bring it back over, and we will check. He said it could be a ground. But when I drove it this morning after I jumped it, and I did get it started, I turned the radio on. Turned the radio off, and when the radio was off, I could still hear electronic static through the speakers when the radio was off, and I'm still hearing like noise and static through the speakers.
Okay.
And I thought that was odd.
Well, I'm not going to chase that symptom. I'm going to work on the real problem.
First.
Because if you say, I want you to stop in the deader than a hammer, doesn't crank, no electricity, and I want you to chase mm-hmm. this noise in my radio speaker, that is a huge mistake for a customer to make. That's just, okay. We don't want to be refocused like that. Let's
you
go after
find
the first
the
one.
Root cause.
Yeah.
The other problem may go away.
And to be honest with you, think about the noise we got in the radio system, mm-hmm. and we've got low voltage situation here. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a charging system problem to me.
It does.
And I'm not suggesting it's the alternator. It could be the fan belt looks like a shoestring and it's all worn out. It could be some kind of a bad connection at the back of the alternator. There's all kinds of things there, but I think this is going to end up being some kind of a charging system problem.
Okay. Could it be a bad battery that's a 12-month battery that's 8 months old?
Well, there's a difference. If the battery's bad and it won't handle a load when you crank it, it just goes, we get the machine gun sound. But it also has a lot to do with the headlight intensity. So if the battery's having a tough time with voltage, the alternator's going to try to make up for that. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these moving parts. It is true that an intermittent problem is going to be hard to find. But to be perfectly honest with you, there's alternators, batteries, connections, and starters. And really and truly, the starter's like a light bulb, and so is the alternator. Either it works or it doesn't.
Okay. Well, I got a new fuel pump anyway, so.
Well,
and you needed it.
Well,
yeah, I know. I did need it.
And I would start off with that. Thank you very much. You diagnosed the fuel pump right. I'm really grateful for that. Let's work on this new problem. It's okay to say something nice like that because that really endears the shop to the customer. They're recognizing your effort. And basically you're saying to them, this problem isn't your problem. It's my car problem. Hopefully you'll have the same success you did on the other one. That's what I would say.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense. All right.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us if you have a car question or a car problem. And ladies, if you and your husband have an argument about a car issue, then you call up and represent the side you want to be the winning side as your side. and Billy and I know those hints real quick.
Yep.
And
we'll
we
side
know,
with you, right?
Yeah,
right.
We're siding with you. But we're really good at those kinds of things. Billy and I, we would make great marriage counselors, but we chose to work on cars. The idea, though, is if there's a dispute in the family, then give us fairly both sides of the dispute, and we'll side which what we want. And we're teasing that we're always going to side with the wife, but that is the path of least resistance in my world. So anyway, 602-508-0960. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about Kurtz Automotive. He's set up at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner of that intersection. He's been around a very, very long time. I can't tell you how many times I've sent someone to Kurtz, and I said, you know, go talk to them. If you can demonstrate the problem, go ahead and do that, and then they'll give you an estimate, and then hopefully their repair fixes your problem. Everybody calls back and says, really a nice place. They did exactly what you said. They fixed it. And most everybody says, and they came in under their estimate. Folks, many of us are going to overbid the job a little bit so that we don't have to call you for a set of new windshield wiper blades and stuff like that. Most all of us do that. So if we don't need the money, the real mark of a good shop, in my opinion, is that you back down to what you should have been at the first place. So if you walk away from $25, you walk away from $25. But Kurtz is a great place, and they have great, strong diagnosticians. Greg, you're up next. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I have a emissions problem, but you said you handle family disputes. So
Yeah.
My wife keeps backing out of the carport, and she's taking off both mirrors. And she says that they should make those breakaway mirrors go both ways. I say she should look in the mirror and see the boat coming. So now I got two mirrors on an 08 Suburban taped up. And how can you help us?
Well, you give me a call, or mark@marksalem.com is my email address, and I know the name of a good divorce attorney. And I think you have some signs of mental crisis here about blaming the margin on the rearview mirrors on somebody who probably, now I'm going to guess here, and get that, wipe that smile off your face, Bill. I want to guess I know that my wife and my daughters had a bad habit when they got into their cars first thing in the morning. They would adjust the rearview mirrors and look at their lipstick and their eyes and their faces and stuff. I think you're in that first 15, 20 second range as well. But if it really, I'm not a very good marriage counselor. And if she called about you, I'd side with her.
And I think she already fixed it. Once you break off both the mirrors, they won't break off any more side view mirrors.
Yeah, and that, I don't know that I agree with that, but I'm going to let you say it. Anyway,
so do I replace them or just leave it the way it is?
Are they still functionable?
Well, she doesn't seem to need them. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, no, I'm not going there. No, I'm siding with if they're broken off and they're hanging on the ground and no one can use them, then you have to do that. But if you were able to just rearrange the position of the mirror and she can still see out of it, and even though there might be cracks in the mirror, then that might be a something that you want to wait on. I'm not really a good marriage counselor, and I'm more scared of your wife than you. So I'm going to side with her right now.
So am I.
Okay.
Well, the emissions question, thank you, I think.
Okay.
The emissions questions, we got an 06 Malibu. It threw four codes, failed emissions, took it in, and they removed two of the codes. But we ended up still with, they chased down EGR, PVC, vacuum lines, and it fixed two of the problems pretty easily. But we had this misfire on cylinder three that kept reoccurring. And we kind of went down this money pit in the diagnosing of it to where initially was, well, it's a bad injector. Then it was, it's a burnt valve. And eventually, they found that it was the camshaft. And so now we can't, you know, at this point, the car's not worth the repair. Could they have gone after that first rather than spending all this money to diagnose? It seems like they kind of did it backwards to where we put $500 in it, $1,200 total, only to find out that it's a complete failure as far as we can't fix the motor without a new motor.
Okay. I'm a little concerned with an engine misfire is going to typically be kind of tough, but one of the very first things you're going to do is hook a vacuum gauge to the motor and look at the intake vacuum, and you're going to run a compression test, and you're going to do a cylinder efficiency test, and of course you're looking
at a leak down test also.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to do all of that, but if you have a burnt valve, that's pretty obvious. And if you have a bad valve that's dancing around the seat, if it's an intake valve, there's going to be an explosion that gets past that valve, so you're going to have a backfire. And then if it's an exhaust valve that's dancing around the seat, then you're going to have a backfire out the tailpipe. Typically, you will. So I on the level of one, you know, the bottom, the middle, and the top, we end up with a bad camshaft. To be perfectly honest with you, if you do your fundamentals right, I'm of the opinion you'll find that bad camshaft in the fundamentals of checking this misfire. Billy?
That's the instinct I have from this situation, too, and I think the conversation would be that, no offense, you guys are nice guys, but it seems to me, you know, when I talk to the master mechanic that the lawyers use, Mark,
yeah.
And he said, you know, this doesn't quite seem right. Would you agree that you could have used a different diagnostic procedure than blaming valves and injectors before you got to this camshaft thing? And if so, maybe I shouldn't be charged for the errors in judgment. I know in my shop, if I think that, you know, go and buy the book or not, if I don't think I gave somebody a good value, I'm going to make it right.
And see, if it's a lean condition and they think it's a fuel delivery problem, a lot of times we swap injectors and see if the problem moves to the other cylinder. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times that we're going to use tailpipe emissions to see if we're running lean on that cylinder, which is high hydrocarbons and a little high NOx, or if we're running rich on that cylinder because the injector's flooding instead of just mm-hmm. spraying. There's all these different moving parts, and if you represented somewhat clearly the path that you took, I would have been somewhat disappointed in my technicians for taking that path. We're having lots of camshaft problems. There's no question about that. That's the way it is on the GM products. But we're all pretty known. I mean, we're looking for backfires, and we're looking for clicking noises, and we're looking for exhaust. People say they have an exhaust leak, but it's really a lifter clicking. We're looking for all that kind of stuff. So there's really no excuse for dancing around for a whole lot of money and then claiming that I need to pull the head because we got a valve. Now, to check the valves, we're going to take the spark plug out. We're going to put the cylinder on top dead center. We're going to put an air hose in there, and we're going to fire up that cylinder with about 120 pounds of air. If the exhaust valve's bad, it's going to be puking air out of the tailpipe. If the intake valve's bad, it's going to be puking air out of the air intake system, the throttle body. It's that simple.
And in this case, you said they did a leak down test.
Yeah.
So this should be one of the things that led them not to call it a valve. But, you know, before they did the test, they could have been suspecting that. By doing this test, they should have proven it was not the valve. So hopefully they did not charge you for a valve repair on its way to the camshaft. Hopefully these were just steps they took on the way to diagnosing the camshaft.
And so you need to sit down and talk with them and ask them for some, is it appropriate for there to be some consideration in the duplication of labor, the duplication of, and perhaps some directions that we took that really didn't move me to the next step, and see what happens. All you can do is ask, be nice and polite, but just talk in plain sense and talk to somebody who can make the decision. It doesn't make any sense for you to go grab the parts guy because his chances of him being able to handle this are slim and none, or even a service writer. So you need to talk to somebody in a position of authority that can make the decision, typically the manager, the general manager, or something like that. But you have a right to be disappointed. Okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you. We're going to take a break, and Rick and Mike, you stay right there, because we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to grab both of you and anybody else at 602-508-0960. Okay, we're rocking and rolling real quick through here, and let me tell you real quick, automatic transmission exchanges is down on Washington. He's been around for a very long time. He knows transmissions, and he had the fundamentals on the Power Glide, the two-speed Power Glides, and some of the old C3s and the full Fords and the old Chrysler products. And now we're talking about 6 and 8 speed and 10 speed automatic transmissions that the computer's shifting. But to be honest with you, it's the same transmission. It's just a different way to go from one gear to the other. So when you have a problem with the transmission, a leak or a shift problem, then call ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange, get an appointment and take your car in and show them what you're talking about, and they'll do a good job for you. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Okay, Rick, you're up first. How can we help you?
Yes, I have a 2008 Cadillac DTS, and I replaced the front struts on it and front tires. I was going to get an alignment, and the alignment specialist said we need to get the rears done also. The rear air shocks are leaking, and apparently the bushings are shot in the lower control arm. I cannot find a supplier for those lower control arms that are complete with bushings.
Well, we do have two choices when we're doing suspension components on most all the cars. You can do a complete unit. You can do an arm, and it's going to come with the ball joint and the bushings, or you can replace the bushings all by themselves. But both Billy and I have sophisticated parts people that have been in the business for 20 years. So on a 1 to 10 scale, for a car that's a GM car that's an 08, this is a 2. But obviously, you can't borrow our people. I think that what I would do is, in my opinion, most of the time, the gray-haired goofy guys that have been in this business a very long time usually reside in the Napa stores. And that might be a phone call you can make. And it's okay if you say, I want the oldest, gnarliest, gray-haired guy you've got there. And that's how I would approach it.
Well, now, I tried Napa also, and they could not get those control arms. And apparently you can't buy just the bushing.
Okay. I've never heard of that before, so I don't know why that is. I don't know. You know, I hear this a lot, but it's just not true in my world. 99 times out of 100, what part of town do you live in?
Over in Goodyear.
Okay. Call Auto Dynamics or call Harkers, either one of them. And I'm quite sure Harkers can help you. Harkers at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around a long time. Bob and Jeremy are two of the best technicians I've ever met in my life. They're certainly in the top crust of our industry. So Harkers, H-A-R-K-E-R-S, Harkers. And I wouldn't ask them to work off someone else's diagnosis. So shop says this is what it needs to have. I think what you need to do is get a fresh pair of eyes and give them the symptoms of the problem and let them see if they come to the same conclusion. Because I can align a car from the front end. I don't need the butt end to be perfect. I can align the front end. If I hang the heads in the back, I'm interested in the center line of the car and that the front tires are facing straight forward. I can still align the front end of the car.
Yeah, I've had two people look at it, and both of them said those bushings are shot. Also, the air compressor for the shocks keeps cycling, so obviously it's got a leak. But anyway.
Yeah, you got a little bit of work.
I'll give those guys a try.
Okay, all right. Well, good. Thank you very much, Rick. Brian, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. 6 weeks ago on my 18 V6 Colorado, I noticed that the battery, one of the posts was putting out sulfating or whatnot, and the first thing I thought was, oh no, how expensive is this alternator going to be? Well, a retired mechanic acquaintance of mine said, no, that's the battery. So I took his advice and I put a battery in it, popped the hood recently, and I go, oh no, it's sulfating. Well, I was mistaken because I just popped the hood now when I was calling you, and it's nothing but the red sealant or protectant that I put on the post has now turned black and kind of dried. So I'm assuming that's okay. But my biggest question, which you can affirm for me, please, but my biggest question, I'm forgetting. If you have a sulfating battery, which I'm calling it, just on the post like that, Is it usually the negative or the positive, or can it be either? And is that related to the regulator and the alternator?
Okay, well, it doesn't make any difference. The polarity on the battery is the same, so the draw on the negative side is the same as the draw on the positive side, so it doesn't make any difference. So there is no good answer to that. Number two, most of the time, if there's corrosion, it's because the battery could be overcharging or there's a leak at the post. And so if you want to, if you have a voltmeter, Billy, what's the voltage he should find at 2,000 RPM with all the accessories off?
Roughly 15.
14, 15. 14,
5 to 15, yeah. 2.
Okay, that's it. So if you're up in the 17, 18, 19 volts, then that's the reason why you're sulfating. That's the reason why the battery's bleeding. It's because we're overcharging it. So 14 and a half, engine idle up, no accessories on, door shut, disconnect the radar detector and everything else, and just see what your voltage is at 2,000 RPM, and that you'll know everything you need to know. Okay?
Thanks. And then just one more quick answer. Can I
go ahead.
Tell you one more thing? About 2 to 3 months ago, I called you on the same truck, and the transmission service is at 45,000 miles, believe it or not, in the book.
Okay.
And this is an 18, and it's like $300 to $400 somewhere in there to get the tranny changed. No dipstick. A professional has to do it. And I found out why. There's a big old cross member that's got to come off before you can get the pan off to do it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just thought I'd tell you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. But, yes, there are idiosyncrasies that cause what would normally be a $200 or $300 transmission, drop the pan and the filter and refill it. There are lots of other issues, and they're car-specific, that can cause that bill to go twice as much or three times as much, depending on the ability of us to do what we need to do. But thank you for that. All righty, Chuck, you're up next. Chuck, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I've got an 07 Chevy Silverado pickup with the 4-speed automatic transmission. And I've noticed lately that when it's warm and I'm driving and I come to a stop, if I come to a slow stop, I can feel it shift back into first gear, you know, into the low range. And it sort of feels like if you went from neutral to drive, that little thump that you get.
Uh-huh.
If I make a fast stop, you know, like light turns red and I have to, you know, come to a pretty quick stop, then it doesn't shift down, but when I let my foot off the brake to accelerate, I feel it shift down into that first gear before it takes off. And again, it feels just like you're going from neutral to drive.
Okay.
Just wondered if that's something I should worry about.
Well, the first thing I want to tell you is I'm not quite sure I'm going to be able to tell a downshift from a clunk.
Mm-hmm.
And and what you have is a noise and probably something that you can feel. And I'm suggesting that could be a clunk and not something with the transmission. And that's what really needs to happen, is it has to be diagnosed first. So before you do anything else is you need to get some gray-haired guy to go drive with you. You need to insist that I'm going to drive. I promise I'm going to give you the steering wheel in the next 4 minutes. I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. Then we're going to trade places. If you say something like that, us old guys want to hug you. Because otherwise your wife comes over and I'm teasing you, and she'll have us out there for an hour and a half while she tries to get it to happen. So if you can make it happen and show us, then you turn around and sit in the passenger seat, instruct him how to make it happen. But I think you're chasing a clunk. I don't think you're chasing a downshift problem.
Yeah, the downshift is much more rare than a clunk. It could be a spring wrap-up, a drive shaft bind.
There's a lot of things that can be.
Let's hope it's not the transmission.
Yeah. You just don't have the right symptoms for a downshift problem on a transmission. That's not what we hear. So that's why both of us are moving to a clunk part. So do you have
it might be, but I'd start with the clunk.
Yeah. Say that again.
Could it be in the front end also?
Well, I'll tell you what, most gray-haired guys, when they'll drive it, they'll figure out where it's coming from, whether it's in the front or in the back. I mean, that's part of the diagnostic process, and we know how to bring it to a stop and then rocket forward and rocket backwards and then back up and abruptly stop, and that stretches the suspension out. So, yeah, it's pretty easy for us to figure out whether it's a suspension clunk or whether we're moving tires and wheels because the A-arms or bushings are gone and all that kind of stuff. That's stuff that we can do. Do you have a shop that you usually use?
Yeah, down the street here, I use Carrie's Auto.
Okay. Chuck, I got to run. But, Jack, you're up next. Jack, how can I help you?
Mark, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to give you guys a call, and thank you very much for recommending Action Auto, I believe it is, on Deer Valley.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I recommended them from listening to it on the show to my son, who had his VW CC, the timing belt replaced. So I just wanted to thank you. Usually you always hear people complaining, so I wanted to thank you.
What a beautiful end to this show.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. You made my whole day. Thank you. I've known Tom since 1983. Tom actually worked for John Rang, and John Rang sold a particular kind of, if you remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, we had the scopes, and you plug your car into the scope, and the scope would talk to your car, and it would tell you what's the matter. Well, there was a Bear, and there was an Allen machine, and they both cost more than my first house. My first house was $33,000, and I bought a scope for $38,000. But we could make that dance back then. That machine was just, and so Tom represented the Allen machine, or the Bear machine, and no, he represented the Allen machine, and I bought the Bear machine. But we've been friends ever since. And I respected him because he was a good salesman, and he could make his machine dance. It's just, I like the process of the other one. Today they're both gone. We just threw our last two away. We had the scopes back in the tree.
We just got rid of my last one.
And those big dinosaurs.
So dusty.
But they did have some really nifty features on them. Like the Bear would do a complete electrical systems test on its own. Hook up the amp probe, the power stroke, and the load. It would do everything for you and print it out and tell you what the parameters are and how you were, where you were out of spec. Well, that became a crutch, as you well know. And so today we don't have those big boxes because the young kids can't handle that kind of stuff. We make them go through the process. But thank you very much for that. I will call Tom and tell him that Jack and his son were terribly happy with the timing belt and that they're only hoping that if the timing belt breaks, it doesn't bend all the valves. Yeah. Can I throw that in? All righty.
Whether they know it or not.
Whether they know it. That's it. All righty. Well, thank you, Jack. Thank you very much. Well, we did 13 calls today. That's pretty doggone good. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Salem is like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. You're welcome to send me a note and ask me a question. I would like you to give me your phone number and a time to call you. You see, I'm going to have some questions, just like on the radio. You tell me what your car is, and you tell me the problem, and I'm going to ask you questions. Does it do it left and right, hot and cold, fast and slow? Those are the things that can help me get closer to the problem. So leave me your phone number, and then when I call you, I'm going to call you on a blocked phone for obvious reasons. But I'm going to, if the phone answers and you don't pick it up, I'm going to say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'm calling about your car problem, and I'm going to call you back in about 4 or 5 minutes. And I'll give you a warning so you can pick up the next blocked caller. And that's going to be me. So anyway, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Our website is marksalem.com, and it has lots of FAQs that I've written over, and they apply from the last 50 years. And there's lots of good information with respect to symptoms and problems for alignments and stuff like that. So, Billy, thanks for spending your Saturday with me.
Enjoyed every minute.
Now, folks, I want to just draw a picture for you. Billy and I are in the radio studio in my auto repair shop in Tempe. And next to Billy's feet is my dog, Marley, sound asleep. And then next to my feet is a big black German Shepherd named Jed, who's sound asleep. And we've both been doing radio for 2 hours. And I had to turn Billy's microphone down just a little bit because the dog was snoring so loud. And I looked over and I thought, Billy's snoring, but it wasn't Billy, it was the dog. So nevertheless, Bill, thanks for spending your Saturday with me. It's always a pleasure. And the rest of you, the real question is it's never really important to be forced into making a decision right then and right there. The best thing you do is everything you want to tell me, please write down. My husband or my wife likes to see it in writing because people typically won't write BS down and sign their name to it. So you want it in writing. Thank you very much. Here's my email address. We'll see you. And we'll see you next week right here on KKNT 960 The Patriot.